20% of our calls are fire calls. 80% of our calls are going to be medical.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. A podcast where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. Today, we're speaking with Katie Martin, a firefighter for LA County's Fire Department. She's a graduate of UCLA's paramedic school, where she taught for many years before joining the LA County Fire. She is one of 47 female firefighters in the county and was featured in Vogue for being one of the many who fought in the California wildfires. I'm excited to chat with her today about the first 100 days as a firefighter and all that's involved. And as a disclaimer for everybody, Katie is also my cousin, so if you hear lots of giggling and laughing and name-calling, it's just part of the trade. But Katie, I'm so excited to be talking to you, and how about you give us a little bit of background as to what station you're at and what that all means?
So I currently work for LA County Fire Department, and I'm stationed in Pomona, which is basically east of Los Angeles, but still in LA County. My roles right now, so my station has a quint or fire truck, and which has a big white ladder on the top and somebody who drives the back. And then it also has a squad, which is a paramedic unit. So there are four people on the truck. So we have a captain, an engineer, a firefighter, and a medic. And then on the squad, we have two paramedics. And so the medics and I, the three of us just rotate between squad days and truck days.
For those of us who don't know, would you mind explaining the difference between a quint and what I imagine a fire truck looks like? Because I'm thinking those toy trucks that everybody has, but yes. I have a feeling it's not the same.
So we have fire engines, we have fire trucks, and then we have quints. So a fire engine is the one that you normally see like driving down the road. It's what you picture when you think of a fire truck, right? It's actually a fire engine, and it has fire hose, a pump, and then a 500-gallon water tank. So that's a fire engine. Now a fire truck has more ladders. It usually has somebody who drives the back. So they're called the tiller person. So they tiller. So you'll see them. They're kind of up higher than everybody else, and they're in the very, very back. And then the truck has a big ladder on top. It's called an aerial ladder, and it can be 75 feet or 100 feet. Ours right now, it's a 75-foot aerial ladder. So the truck doesn't have a fire hose, really. It doesn't have a pump. It doesn't have a water tank. But it has tons of ladders. It's like a giant toolbox. We have lots of chainsaws, rotary saws, anything that you need to break doors, windows, salvage and overhaul. So it's just a huge, giant toolbox. If we need to cut up a car, we've got the tools on there for that. Now, a quint is basically a combination fire engine and fire truck. So it looks like a fire truck. It's got the tiller in the back. It's got the big white aerial ladder. But then it also has, it's called a quint because it has five things. So it has ground ladders, an aerial ladder, fire hose, a pump, and a water tank. So those are the five things that it has.
Dang. So was this stuff that you knew before you got into the fire
game? Not at all.
Okay, yeah. So glad to know I'm not the only one who's like, what are all of these things? Can you explain what are the different types of things that you get called for? And you don't have to go in depth because we can talk about that later.
Okay.
But when someone calls, you know, is it just house fires? What are the different things that you do?
So,
that's what I picture firefighters do.
Right. Okay. So I think that's true. That's what most people picture firefighters responding to. And that's accurate, right? So if you call 911 and your house is on fire, we'll respond to that. So we respond to house fires or residential fires. We'll respond to commercial fires, which can be a strip mall, it can be a McDonald's, it can be a nail salon. So those would be considered commercial fires. We also respond to high-rise fires. So for LA County, most of our high-rise is actually in West Hollywood. That's one of our contract cities. So the stations there are really awesome at fighting high-rise fires. So that's anything, you know, we're looking at like six stories and above. So we also do car fires. So, and that may be in a driveway, it may be on the side of the freeway, that has its own kind of things that go along with it, especially since we have hybrid cars now and electric cars, and it's not just like we have all gasoline engine cars.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, we also do, especially here in LA County, we do a lot of vegetation fires and a lot of brush fires. So like last year we had the Woolsey fire, or 2018 was the Woolsey fire. We had the Tick fire last year. So we respond and we get deployed on these brush fire assignments, wildfire assignments, and we can be gone for up to 2-3 weeks at a time on those. So we respond to fires. And then there's a lot of different fires that we respond to. On the truck, especially, we'll respond to what we call TC trapped, or traffic collision trapped, which means there's an auto accident, right? And we respond to all sorts of, we respond to fender benders, we respond to rollovers, we've shut down the freeway multiple times for traffic accidents.
And that's just like, you guys are there really just to put the truck in the way, or the engine, or the quint, or whatever is there.
Yes. And step one, so that's the engineer, the guy who drives or the girl who drives, that's their job, is to make sure that they're blocking traffic and keeping us safe. Because actually one of the top line of duty death causes, or the reasons why firefighters die on the job, is actually because we get hit by cars on roadways. So, yeah, so the engineer has this really key job of making sure that they're parking to protect us and protect the scene of the incident. But then once we're on scene, maybe it means we're cutting the person out of the car. And so we take, we have AMCUS tools or Genesis tools, but they're basically like what you picture as the jaws of life. And we can literally cut the roof off a car, cut the, we can roll their dash, we can take off the whole side of the car if we need to get them out. And then we also provide patient care. So there's, it's usually more than, especially if it's like a traffic collision where somebody's trapped, you have the paramedics responding, you have the truck responding, you usually have a battalion chief responding, you have an engine responding just in case the cars catch on fire. And then it's a multitude of people who are cutting them out and then providing that patient care. So I'd say that probably 20% of our calls are fire calls, fire alarms, just kind of, and we'll get a lot of like false alarms. That's probably 15 to 20% of our calls. 80% of our calls are going to be medical. So that can be anything from medical, meaning involved in a car accident, right, to I'm having chest pain, I have a headache, I think I'm having a stroke, I have the flu, I stubbed my toe, I dropped a can opener on my foot, my tummy aches. It can be my cousin's dead. There's all sorts of things that, that we respond to. Hey, I haven't seen my neighbor in 4 days and the house really smells. And so then we, there's all sorts of things that we'll show up for in terms of medical, a lot of psych rescues. So people who are having a behavioral crisis, lots of drug issues, drug overdoses, gunshot wounds, suicide attempts. So there's just this whole, if you don't know how to solve something and something is wrong in your life, you call 911 and the fire department shows up and we figure out how to do it. We got called the other day for a kid who got his head, it was a 5-year-old, and he got his head stuck in a fence. And so we just figured out how to, we just widened everything a little bit and we'll get him out. So,
yeah. Okay, cool. I mean, I guess that makes sense, because it's not like I would ask for the police to show up if I had a physical ailment or something like that, that's right. I guess that makes sense. That's not who I would call.
When you call 911, the dispatcher actually is the kind of the first line. They decide, do you need police or do you need fire? And usually they say, 911, what is your emergency? 911, do you need police or do you need fire? Or is it medical, or is it, a criminal? And sometimes it's both. A lot of times we respond to crime scenes, obviously with the police. And so we really try and take care of each other in that regard. But yeah, generally speaking, we had a lady call because her house was flooding. And we, she was elderly and we helped her out as best we could and got the water out. And then figured out that her washing machine, just the sensor was broken and it just kept filling up.
Dang. Well, before I ask you about your specific journey to becoming a firefighter, what would you say is the involvement of the ambulances when it comes to firefighters and all that jazz? Like, are they one and the same? Are they part of the same crew? What's the story?
So, good question. And it depends on where you live and how your fire department operates. So for LA County Fire does not have ambulances. So other ambulance companies contract with LA County Fire or with cities that contract with LA County Fire. And so they'll do the transports. So kind of the backstory to this is when it comes to medical, you have EMTs or emergency medical technicians. And every LA County firefighter, and that includes engineers, captains, chiefs, we're all EMTs. And EMTs can do basic things like give you oxygen, take your blood pressure, check your blood glucose level, splint your arm, put you on a backboard. They can do that kind of stuff, give you an ice pack if you, you know, if you sprained your ankle. So we would refer to those patients as kind of like little sick. So they're not like sick, sick, sick patients. So everybody on LA County Fire is an EMT. And then we also have paramedics. And so paramedics can do things like give you medications, start IVs, put a tube down your trachea if you can't breathe, give you meds to help you breathe better, drill into your bone if we can't get an IV on you in a full arrest, we can shock you. So there's all sorts of more invasive things, for lack of a better term, that we can do as paramedics that EMTs don't do. So the reason why we needed that backstory is LA County has paramedic squads, which is basically like a utility truck that's outfitted to carry all of our equipment on it. And so we have our splints, we have backboards, we have our monitor, we have our med box, we have extra supplies of everything you could possibly think of for a medical emergency. And so if a patient's really sick, they'll call the paramedics, we'll respond, and an ambulance company responds with us. And if the patient just it's kind of, if we determine them to just be like little sick, but they need to go to the hospital, they can just go in the ambulance with the EMTs who are with that ambulance company, and they'll take them to the hospital. If the patient's sick or big sick, I'll hop in the back, or my partner will hop in the back of the ambulance with the patient. And then our paramedic squad and the ambulance will go together to the hospital. So some fire departments don't have any paramedics and they utilize private ambulance companies for that. Some fire departments like LA City, they have their own ambulances. So they have BLS ambulances and ALS ambulances. And so they transport, LA City transports all their patients. They don't contract with any private ambulance companies. And so it just kind of depends on where you are, what department. And then I think in the Midwest, it's even more different than that. So,
right. Yeah. Disclaimer to anybody in any other city, I guess, because it could be very different, but instead totally. It's still very insightful. Okay. Well, cool. Okay. Now that we know, this is 15 minutes, but now that we know all the basics, no, don't be sorry. Don't be sorry. I literally know nothing. So this is really helpful. So now that we know the basics, why don't you give us a little bit of background as to how you got to where you are and kind of in, yeah, because you're, oh man, I don't know how old you are anymore. You're 36.
That's okay. We can just say 29.
29. Katie is 29. And because I know this took a couple rounds and you did other stuff beforehand. Because you went to Gonzaga for journalism. Like you're not, no one goes to college for firefighting. At least not that I'm aware of, you know?
Right. There actually are fire science classes that you can take. And a lot of people do those. Yes. Fire behavior is a huge, like, people think like, oh, well, you just need to put water on the fire. Like, yes and no. And there's so many things that you can do to actually predict fire behavior and control fire behavior. And I'm going to not nerd out on the science of all that with you, except to just tell people as a PSA, when you go to bed at night, shut your bedroom doors.
Dang. Well, it wouldn't be an episode with a firefighter if we didn't get some PSAs about how to stay safe. So good. But yeah, so there are fire science classes. You did not take any of those.
I did not. Great. That would have been super cool.
So how did this happen?
So when I was probably 10 years old, I told my dad, I said, Dad, I know what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a paramedic. And he said, don't be a paramedic, be a doctor. They make more money. And I thought, okay, that makes sense. But when I was a kid, I loved watching, Mary, you're for sure too young for the show, but I love watching Rescue 911. And even though we just told everyone that I'm 29, they now know that is not the case because the show was no longer on the air.
You were a very enlightened young child. That's what you were.
So, and I loved that show and I would just watch it anytime it came on. My brother and I were so excited to watch it. But after that conversation with my dad, when I was, you know, the ripe age of 10 years old, I kind of like, it did kind of steer me away from that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, med school, I'll think about that. And then I realized as I got older, that's 12 years of schooling. I do not have that kind of attention span. That's a lot of school and a lot of money. And so anyway, I actually wound up initially going to a liberal arts college because I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to major in. And I was leaning toward law school. And then I realized I really don't like to argue with people that much. And
are you sure?
I'm
sure about that.
No. Okay. That's true. So anyway, so then I actually left my first college and transferred to Gonzaga in Eastern Washington. And I thought, what is something that I'm like halfway decent at that I know can get me out of college as soon as possible? And so I knew I could write. I always enjoyed writing. So I got my degree in journalism. I was a fifth year senior, did my little victory lap there since I transferred in. And then after that, I went and I did youth ministry for a year full time. And I did a lot of writing and editing with that. And as much as I loved the work, I realized that I definitely did not want to be behind a computer or at a desk for the rest of my career. And so I started thinking again about, you know, what about that EMT thing? What about that paramedic thing? And so I actually moved, I was not living in Seattle at the time, and that's where my family is now. And so I moved back there, went to EMT school, and absolutely loved it. Since I was like kind of in between careers, I was living at home, and my parents said that they had never seen me that excited about anything. And I would actually get up early in the morning, which Mary knows I'm not a morning person. So I would get up early in the morning to study. I did all the reading. I read every chapter. I would come home and I would talk to my parents about class and how much fun I had. And I had to do a 12-hour shift at the trauma center downtown at Harborview. And it was, I did night shift, and it was just like Christmas for me. I just had the best time. And I was like, this is what I meant to do. This is great. So I worked on an ambulance full-time for about 3 years up in Seattle before I decided to go to paramedic school. So I moved back down to Los Angeles and then went to UCLA's paramedic education program. So that was about a 9-month program. And then it was after that I decided that I wanted to start testing for fire departments. And so it was, I want to say, about 3 days after I graduated from paramedic school, got on a plane, met you in Germany. We backpacked through Europe for 6 weeks. And then I flew back on a Friday night, and then Saturday morning literally went to the LA Convention Center and took my first test for fire departments.
Yes, you came and traveled with me for 6 weeks, but you graduated and you had to like wait for certification, right?
Yeah, exactly. So paramedic school, so there's the classroom portion and where you learn everything, and then you practice your skills and you start IVs on mannequins and you intubate mannequins, and then you go into the hospital setting for about a month and you practice those skills on real people. I probably shouldn't call it practicing. You refine those skills on real people. And then you do an internship. So I did my internship with LA City Fire Department, and that was a 2 or 3 month internship. And so, so you wound up being, I think I did 25 shifts with LA City. And so, so it's kind of a, there's definitely a process to it. And then once you complete your internship, you turn all your paperwork into the school, you take, a national exam. So through the National Registry of EMTs and Paramedics, once you pass that, then you apply for your state certification. And then after you get your state certification, you get your local accreditation, which is through whatever county you work for or plan on working for. And so it's definitely like there's a waiting period there of about, if you're on the ball with it, it's still about like 6 weeks before you get your license back. And once you get your license, it's not a license to practice. It's just like you have a license, you can't actually use it until you're hired somewhere. Yeah, so the process of actually like getting your license, there's definitely a waiting period. It takes some time. I went and backpacked through Europe, and I kind of looked at this time between when I hopefully would land a good paying like career job and graduating from medic school. I looked at that time as this is an opportunity for me to work hard, play hard, and I probably won't have this period of time again. It was so, to me, it was like a gap year in my life. Because once you get hired and you have that career job, like most people, like for me to leave LA County Fire Department, it would take a lot. Like I don't see myself ever leaving. Like this is a, it's a great job. It's a great career. I'm invested in the department. I'm invested in the county and the people that we serve. So I don't see myself going anywhere else. And I kind of knew that. I knew when I got hired, it's a place where I'd want to be planted. I'd want to put down roots. So I was definitely happy to be a little free and traveling during that time. I still worked part-time on the ambulance, so I'd go back up to Seattle and I'd just shove a bunch of shifts together, work a ton, and then I'd go travel for a week or 2 weeks. And then I'd do the same thing over and over again and kind of finesse my schedule to where I could apply for fire departments, get some of these physical tests for them done over here, do backgrounds with them. It's applying for fire departments is like its own full-time job almost. Mm-hmm. So,
well, because it's not just a academic thing and knowing all the right stuff to do, but also you have to be physically fit, right? Like it's also something you are physically training for.
I mean, I was actually just talking to a group of girls about this on Saturday that for the most part, fire departments in the United States, the average, I last read, and I'm totally willing to be wrong on this, I want to say is like 2-5% female. And I realize that that is a huge percentage gap between saying like 2% or 5%. But I just don't, I heard 2%. I think it might be slightly more than that. So it's somewhere in that range. Either way, there's a lot more dudes who are firefighters than women. And part of that, so I was telling this group of girls, I said, the only thing that really holds us back from being able to be successful as firefighters is just our physical capabilities. So, because it's not, firefighting is not this, like you don't have to be like Mensa level smart to be a firefighter. Okay. But from a physical standpoint, it's a very physically demanding job. So, if you don't like getting your hands dirty, if you don't like physical labor, you are in the wrong career. Mary knows this, but I'm 5'2", so I'm short.
Include a picture in the show notes. I'm
very short. I knew that my stature was going to be an issue. So I just worked really hard to overcome that. I learned the equipment that we carry, none of it, maybe except for our ladders, is like really, really heavy, that you're expected at least to carry by yourself. So, you know, our tools, like the chainsaws are about 14 pounds. The rotary saws are same, about 14 pounds. Our tools for like cutting people out of cars, those are definitely heavier. They're like 35 pounds, 40 pounds, depending on which tool you're carrying. But we're also carrying that stuff and using it when we have our turnouts on, and then when we have our breathing apparatus on our back and our helmet on our head and tools in our pockets. And all of that, when we're wearing all that equipment, it's probably about, like with my BA and my turnouts on, it's probably 45 to 50 pounds extra. And then if you're carrying tools, like, okay, we're carrying a couple chainsaws and we're going to the roof to cut a hole, that's what we do on the truck or the Quint, which is, I love that work. It's awesome. It's pretty labor intensive, but it's an awesome experience. And I love it. So you add that in and you're wearing an extra 50 pounds and then you're carrying like 30 more pounds on top of it. So so once I realized that I knew I wanted to become a firefighter, I did. I had been training by myself. I used to be a runner. And I realized that just was not going to cut it. There are some physical tests that most departments have as like prerequisites. One of them is called the CPAT, or the Candidate Physical Agility or Ability Test. So there's that one that they require before you even apply for their department. And it involves like you wear a 50-pound weight vest the whole time, and the first 3 minutes and 20 seconds are on a step mill with, you have 75 pounds on instead of just 50 pounds. And then the rest of the test is about like 7 minutes long once you get the stairs out of the way. And it's just like a dummy drag and simulating some just really basic, firefighting operations, like super basic. And so, so in training for that, I have a 50-pound weight vest and a 75-pound weight vest. And while most people on Friday nights in Manhattan Beach were having nice dinners with their dates, I was doing stairs with a 75-pound weight vest on and then running a mile down the beach and back. And running is such a generous term for what my body was doing with that weight vest on. But then I realized that I needed more of a challenge, more of a, and that I wasn't pushing myself hard enough. So I did sign up for CrossFit, and the supportive community environment that I found there, plus the friendly competition that you have when you're like, I want to lift more than you, or, oh, that's what you're doing over there. Once you have the good form and technique down, super, super fun. And so I totally fell in love with that. And so it was just a matter of figuring out with some of the physical things that I was doing, how to make it mimic some of the things that we would do on a fire ground. Like, okay, so I can deadlift 340 pounds. Awesome. But how do I make that equate to having, if we're on a fire and my partner falls down a flight of stairs and I need to pull him up, like, am I doing a deadlift for every stair? And honestly, with most of the guys that I work with, when they're in full gear, they're going to be about 300 pounds, 250, 300 pounds, you know? So it's just in like, okay, I can put 150 pounds above my head. Awesome. But how does that translate into carrying a 14-foot extension ladder that weighs 105 pounds on my shoulder? Right. So just finding ways to kind of translate that.
This is all before you're even in a fire academy. Yeah. So like Katie is one of the hardest working people I know. She mentioned that she is 5'2", which makes a lot of the physical parts of things really difficult. She had been in some other fire academies before finishing the one that she was in and then got into the fire department. But just so everybody knows how awesome she is, she literally bought herself ladders to practice with because that, right? That was the one thing you were kind of like sticking with a lot. Like, that was difficult. Katie literally bought herself ladders to practice to get through the academy, which is just insane. So explain what the academy process is like and what they can expect.
So there's basically two types of fire academies. So there's like a fire department fire academy, and then there's a private fire academy. So a private fire academy, those are usually offered through like community colleges. We have multiple down here in the Southern California area, and they are like they're a legit fire academy. You can get your firefighter one, you can get your firefighter two from there, or at least get on the right path to be able to getting those certifications from the state. But a lot of smaller fire departments, in order for you to even apply for them, a lot of the smaller departments that maybe have two or three stations will require you to already have completed a fire academy, like a state fire academy, in order just to be in their application process. Some other departments, so like LA County Fire Department, LA City Fire Department, Santa Monica, like a lot of the larger departments, they will have their own fire academy. So a private fire academy, you're paying to go to, and those can either be full-time or part-time. And a lot of people do that even before they get hired by big fire departments like LA County Fire Department. And if I could do it over, because truth be told, I was hired when I was 34, I'm 36 now. And I wish that I had, yes, I wish that I would have realized when I was a little bit younger that this was what I wanted to do, because by the time I realized that I do want to do fire, this is definitely like, I like helping people. I like being a part of a team. I like physical labor and I like medical. Sweet. I found the perfect job for me. I'm going to be a firefighter. By the time I realized that, I had big girl bills to pay. So I couldn't just say, I'm going to take like 4 months off and go to this private fire academy and not get paid and pay to go. So it's like, I couldn't afford to do that. I was too old to do cadet or explorer programs, which are programs that a lot of fire departments will offer teenagers or usually up to like age 21 or 22-ish for younger people who are interested in the fire service to get their hands on with equipment. They usually meet like on weekends or on Sundays and they'll go through drills and they'll learn more about basically different aspects of the fire service and how to do hose lays, throw ladders, forcible entry, all these types of things. So I went through a career fire academy. So with LA County, now LA County has 170, at last count was 174 stations. I think we just acquired two more. So maybe we're at 176 now. So it's huge. It's an absolutely huge fire department. We have about 3,000 firefighters. In fire academy with them, it was, 18 weeks, 16 or 18 weeks, maybe 17 weeks. And it is just, so we would get there you basically have no life. You have no life like when you're on probation with the fire department anyway, but fire academy, like that is your sole focus. And so we would get up at about 4:30 in the morning. We would be at the fire academy by 5:15, unload all of our gear, the most important thing in fire academy is everybody looks the same. You're all doing the same thing. All your gear is lined up the same. You're carrying your water bottles in the same hand. You're like marching in the same step. If you have a name badge, it's like pinned at the exact same spot. If you have a tie clip, it's in the exact same spot, and you know, make sure there's no fingerprints on it. So everything, you look exactly the same. Everything is about uniform and it's detailed. So we'd line all our gear up in the morning. So it'd be our turnout jackets and our helmets and our water bottles. And then we would clean, the training grounds, and then we would PT or do our workout for an hour. Which was not like, this wasn't like, oh, I feel like running on the treadmill today. It was, you know, you're running in cadence like for a couple miles, and I am not built for running anymore. And sometimes we'd run hills. And then sometimes it would be a circuit workout where you'd have like a partner and they'd be working out for 60 seconds. You'd be like cheering them on or holding a plank or doing push-ups or whatever for 60 seconds. And then you guys would rotate and go to the next station. And usually though, there was some form of running every day, even if it was just like running the tower. Yeah. So, and then we had a couple lectures during fire academy. So we'd get lectured on fire hose and friction loss and pumping operations, ladders, how to place ladders, how to throw ladders, how to know what size ladder you need, tools, forcible entry. So we'd get all these great lectures. But most of our day was spent out on what we called just the grinder, which is the training ground. So you are
we such call an it endearing term, really.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It grinds you up and spits you out. Yeah. Yes. And so we call it throwing our BAs. So we would we'd be putting our breathing apparatus on for time, right? We had to do it under 60 seconds. We'd have to get our turnouts on in a certain amount of time. We practiced over and over how to do certain hose lays, which means like we were pulling hose out of the back of the fire engine, and you basically, I would say like 60 to 70% of fire academy is, can you follow instructions? Can you follow instructions? Because on the fire ground, if my captain tells me something, I need to be able to make sure that I clearly understand what he's telling me to do and that I can execute it. So, and obviously like if you see a safe, this is not true for academy necessarily, but if you see like a big safety concern on an actual fire incident, like, and maybe your captain doesn't see it, like you relay information, there's a little bit more communication. But fire academy is very much like, if they tell you pick up this hose, and when I say hose, we're not talking about garden hose, like this is, you know, 4-inch hose that weighs 65 pounds for every 50 feet of it. And if they say you're gonna grab this hose with your right hand with your thumb up, you don't say why, you say sir, yes, okay, sir. And you grab it with your right hand with your thumb up and you do exactly what they tell you to do. So we'd be pulling hose, throwing BAs, throwing ladders, and we did a lot of live fire burns. So that was our day Monday through Friday, and we would be at the training center from about 5:30 in the morning, 5:15, 5:30 in the morning. Oh, I mean, some nights we left at 9, some nights we left at, and you just feel stupid. You come back the next day, you haven't slept, you don't retain any information, right. And the cadre are looking at you like, you guys are so dumb. And you're like, yes, yes, like, sir, I know. We are. I have no excuses. I'm so sorry. Like, I smell, I'm disgusting, I'm sweaty, I have cuts all over my hands. It's like a million paper cuts with lemon juice in them. You're just gross constantly. I can't even imagine how bad we all smelled. I would say that toward the end of the tower or fire academy, we were leaving probably around like between 6 and 6:30 was when our cars were actually exiting the training ground. And so we have for LA County, the first part is combat. And that's really when we're tested on very, very specific things, like how you throw the ladders, how you pull the fire hose out of the engine and do these hose lays, how fast you throw your BAs. And it's all a lot of repetition so that you build this muscle memory. So that way when you're on an incident and someone's house is on fire, right? Or someone is, you know, God forbid, they're at that second floor window and they're saying, I can't get out, the stairs are blocked, and you just have to go into go mode and you can't think of, shoot, what should I do to get to that person? You're like, I know exactly what ladder I need to grab. I'm going to know exactly how to throw it. I know exactly how to throw my mask on and my BA on, and away we go, right? So they build that muscle memory, and we do it all for time. So you can't, it's not like somebody's hanging out the window going, get to me at your convenience. You're like, oh, you needed me yesterday. You needed me 5 minutes ago. Like, okay. So everything is, we need to be efficient and prompt with everything that we do. And so that way our movements matter and they're measured. And so, yeah, so the first like 5-6 weeks is a lot of repetition. And then we went into more advanced fire behavior and firefighting techniques.
Did you get those fire science classes then?
I did not get fire science classes, but if you're interested in them, you can take them through the local community colleges. And most, you actually can get an AA degree or AS degree, I guess, Associates of Science. In fire science, yeah, or an AA.
When do they teach you all the science stuff, or the like? You know, this is what we do when. Or
so
I guess when you are actually in the fire department, do you just follow instructions?
So,
I guess.
Yes. So there's a couple things. One, when we were in fire academy, we had lectures on fire behavior. It was just obviously just a little bit more, both I guess simultaneously like condensed and expanded. Then had I taken it maybe at a community college, because it was an all day thing and they would like, maybe they're lecturing us on fire behavior. Right. And so we watch videos, they get our feedback, they point out things to us, like, and they're videos of actual incidents or of, so actual fires or actual trainings that have, that they've done to kind of, whether it's prove a point or explain a situation. So we'll watch that, we'll sit in the classroom, and then we'll go out to these conics bins, and they light stuff on fire, and then we experience it. So we kind of talk about it conceptually and then actually get to go experience it. And so, so you don't want the first time that you're cutting apart a car to be when somebody actually needs to be cut out of a car and needs to go to the hospital, right? So we practice on cars. We practice all sorts of different techniques for moving fire hose through a building, which is much harder than it sounds when you're like up a flight of stairs and around a corner. And, you know, anyway, I'm going to nerd out and go into all this other crap that you don't need to know. So we have like our combat, our basic portion in the beginning of Fire Academy. We did our advanced firefighting techniques. And then we did EMT. Not everyone in my class was an EMT. And so, so we had a month of, classroom lectures. So we still PT'd every morning. We were still there at the same time. But then we just sat in the classroom and practiced, and it was lecture and skills. And then we did hazmat training, driving, because you have to, even though I'm just a knuckle dragging firefighter paramedic, I still need to be able to drive the engine or drive the truck. If for whatever reason, my engineer gets detailed out. And then we did wildland firefighting too, which was another week.
So then after everything in academy, is it like match day for doctors, or was the academy linked up with a actual like unit station that you're going with?
So basically the way, my understanding, at least the way LA County places their fire. So once you get through, when you're in the tower, when you're in fire academy, you're called a recruit. And you're just known by your number. So I was recruit 28. So that is now my favorite number. And academy is like the most fun you never want to have again. Like you look back on it and you're like, that was great. And you bond. We started with 48. I was the only girl. And then 37 of us graduated. So we lost 11 people throughout that process. And so the way that LA County, at least my understanding of it, places their firefighters at stations is you just kind of, we have, like I said, 174-ish stations right now, and they see where are there vacancies where we can send our recruits. And so once you graduate Fire Academy, then you become a probationary firefighter. We wear these big goofy red shields on our helmets, so everybody knows, like, oh, that's the probationary firefighter. And then also, so everybody knows, like, keep an eye out on that person. And also, why aren't
Katie's episode was so jam-packed with information, we made a part two, out tomorrow at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski, and feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.